Okay, this hour, let's take your phone calls with Mark Goodman as we talk about cyber crimes. Maybe you've been hit by one. Share the story. We'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Mark Goodman with us. Mark, we're coming up on the anniversary date of the missing Malaysia plane MH370. I wrote a book with Richard Belzer and David Wayne on this called Someone is Hiding Something. There has been talk that that Boeing 770 could be hacked into and controlled. Have you heard anything like that?
So I'll say off the bat, I don't have any in-depth knowledge of the MH370, particularly compared to you and all the research that you've done into it. But what I will say is that planes are computers, and they are hackable. And in future crimes, I talk about some examples of that happening where individual planes, elements of the planes, whether it be the in-flight entertainment system or other elements of flight management, theoretically, and have been targeted by hackers. So it is certainly possible. The other thing that is entirely hackable, unfortunately, is our air traffic control system. The U.S. Department of Transportation, the inspector general there, did a study of the FAA and air traffic control and gave them really poor marks, and I think identified well over 100 critical or super high-level flaws from a computer perspective in managing the air traffic control systems in the country. So certainly hacking a plane, we can hack cars, we can hack planes, it is possible.
If you're going to attack a nation, would you take down its computer system first?
I would take down its electricity first.
Yeah.
I think that because you lose the electricity, you lose the computers.
And then in you go.
Yes.
Okay, let's take some calls. We've got an hour to go, and they're lining up for you. Jeff is in Simi Valley, California, to get us started on the wild card line. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, George, Mark, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
A couple of quick things. One is just a bit of advice I would like to mention. With my passwords, I never type in my passwords. I keep them in an encrypted file, especially like on a memory stick, and then copy and paste my passwords. You know, I've got dozens and dozens of passwords. And when you do the copy and paste thing, then if you have malware on your computer, it doesn't get transmitted out to a third party, which is a little bit of extra protection. And I would also like to get your opinion. This is something that I've been concerned about for a while with the millions and millions of computers that are constantly turned on and online, of a group of people taking and writing small programs that at some point could be synchronized, even asynchronously turned on to get one giant supercomputer running with all these programs running on individual, millions of individual computers. You would have something that would be like a dozen Crays running all at once, a massive supercomputer. And I'm just kind of wondering what you think of that.
Well, I think password management is a key issue today, and it's something that we all struggle with. I start off Future Crimes actually talking about Matt Honan, who was a Wired reporter and had his entire life turned upside down, where he lost, 8 years of his Gmail, where a hacker came after him, deleted his baby photos, so his brand new baby daughter, the first 2 years of all the photos of her life were deleted photos of his, grandparents and relatives who had long since died. So all of the information that were stored online today is secured with a password, and as you point out, it's badly, badly broken. As to the technique that you're using, I could see some advantages of it, but one of the attacks that's out there is when you hit up a website, they actually can see what you have stored in memory, in cut and paste. So if you have something, if you've cut and paste something, the last thing that you have in that memory actually can be read by the websites that you visit. So there's another solution out there, which is called a password manager. And there are certain companies, I don't know if I can recommend companies, but I would just say, I mean, I can recommend companies. I don't know if you want me to. But I would say organized crime has created programs to help you manage your passwords. So you need to choose very, very carefully. And they're fully encrypted. You can lock in all your passwords there, and they can help quite a bit. There's also something now called two-factor authentication, which companies like Google and Gmail, Facebook, PayPal, where they will send you a unique one-time password on your mobile phone via SMS, text, or app, so that even if somebody steals your original password, unless they have that second factor to authenticate to the system, they won't be able to get in. And I recommend both a password wallet or manager, as well as two-factor authentication.
You know, Mark, as this technology gets even bigger and bigger in the next few years, what do the hackers do next? I mean, is this a constant battle where new technology beats the hackers beat the new technology, and so forth?
Well, you're right. It's definitely an arms race, right? So we develop a defense, they break it. We go back and redeploy, try to fix it, and they're right back at us. But from my optic, it seems like the bad guys are definitely outrunning the good guys. All computers are hackable. FBI Director Mueller, the former director, said there are only two types of companies out there, those that have been hacked and those that will be. And so we just don't have fundamentally secure computing. That's one of the issues of the book. And whatever the latest, greatest thing is, hackers are going to be all over it.
Next up, let's go to Anthony in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Wildcard Line. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning. Share a story with you. In South Florida, you notice a lot of folks from Mexico, for example, with gang on their necks in the construction zone, and they're building all these banks, like PNC Bank, for example, and you see all this strange activity around the bank. Where I feel that this is what they're doing. They're infiltrated in these banks and hooking up these systems where they skim off everybody's life. I worked in the telecommunication business. You can get a multiplexer and you can actually put something in your garage, rent a line, and have all the transactions transferred over the rental line. And if I know I'm jumping around here, but what I'm saying, they get into these banks by air conditioner person. So your sensitive areas that need air conditioning, they can hook these systems up within the bank. And
that's pretty novel, I guess.
This is what they're catching down here in South Florida. They're actually arresting them now, but it's taking years to investigate these situations.
Have you heard of this, Mark?
Yeah, Anthony's actually bringing up something I was just talking to an investigator about today, which is the placement of organized criminals, whether they be gang members or Eastern European organized gangs, into construction for the purposes of including basically wiretap devices in the facilities that they're building so that they can take information out. There are any number of banks where people have walked in and pretended to be repairmen, air conditioning repairmen, heating repairmen, and they're sneaking into the back of the bank. They're putting a on the line,
lazy.
Copy those transactions. They're putting thumb drives that they're hiding into computers, and so there are a large variety of threats. You know, we're talking about technical security, but there's personnel security too. The concept that if you've got workers walking around unescorted in your building, you've got an issue. And just to further emphasize Anthony's point, I'm sure, George, you remember the famous Target hack that occurred not last Christmas, but the Christmas before.
I sure do.
One of the things that most people don't realize about that is how the hackers got in. So here we are all swiping our credit cards at the Target, you know, payment terminals, the point of sales. How did the hackers get malware into every cash register in the country for Target? Most people don't know. It was through the air conditioning. They got into Target through the heating and air conditioning systems, the HVAC systems. Target used a third-party vendor to centrally manage the heating and air conditioning.
Which was all tied into everything they do, I guess.
All tied in. Those air conditioning systems, the hackers first sent an email to an employee at the air conditioning company. He clicked on a link he wasn't supposed to. It infected the air conditioning company's computers, which were tied into Target's computers, which were tied into Target's financial management.
That was brilliant.
Tied to the cash registers. So this is when I say everything is connected, this is the point, right, is that your air conditioning is connected to your cash.
Jeez. Now, how do they fight that? How does Target fight that, Mark?
You know, it's really complex. It's easy to blame the victim in some of these cases, but it's a hard problem. That say, there are some really great victims out there. Sony is a great example of being an excellent victim, as was Anthem Blue Cross, because if you're not going to encrypt your data, at the Sony hack, they kept the passwords of 47,000 employees in a Word document called Password, which was unencrypted. So don't store your passwords in a Word doc called Password, as one example. So I think there are lots of human mistakes that are made, and then there are technical mistakes, but they're really going to have to up their game and understand it, right? If you're a retailer, you're not used to this level of threat. And now, as more and more nation states are starting to hack, you know, to expect a small retailer in Chicago or South Florida to have the expertise to protect themselves from the Chinese government or the North Koreans or Iranians or, you know, even American government services is really a tall order. I guess that's my point, is that most people are not fighting the fair fight and need much better tools, much more education.
Let's go to Stefania in Brooklyn, New York, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Stefania.
Hello.
Hi.
So I'm wondering about these smart TVs. So if you don't enable that feature, is it still able to, you know, listen and or watch you?
That's a great question. So according to the terms of service, it's not supposed to be able to do it. But again, your television is now just software. So, you know, it's very easy for hackers to break it, even if Samsung doesn't do it. Certainly, you're relying upon them and your trust in Samsung that when you tell them, please turn off that feature, and they show you on the screen that the feature's turned off, that it's actually turned off. But how would you know? How would you actually know whether or not they were recording you? I tell the story of several people who were hacked in future crimes, including some teenagers. Miss Teen America was hacked, a woman or a young girl called Cassidy Wolf, and she was coming out of her bedroom, and she kept her laptop in her, you know, teenager's bedroom, and one day she received an email, and in it were dozens of pictures of her naked in her own bedroom, and there was a threat, and it said, you better have sex with me on camera, or I'm going to release all of these photos on your Facebook page to your high school friend. And so she panicked, she slammed down the laptop, and fortunately, in this case, she called the FBI, and what they discovered was, after a lengthy investigation, it was one of her high school classmates, a 16-year-old kid who had a crush on her, and he went ahead and bought a piece of software on the internet that hacked her camera. This goes back to our point in the first
16 years old. And how about those families, Mark, where they set up a little camera system to watch and monitor their little baby that's sleeping, and all of a sudden they could hear a voice talking to the kid. Somebody hacked into it.
Yep, absolutely. There's a story that I tell of a little infant girl called Jessica, and her parents were asleep, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, they heard somebody screaming profanities at their daughter. Jessica, wake up! And they were using bad names. And they thought they had an intruder in the house, and they ran into their infant daughter's bedroom, and they saw that little nanny cam turned and looked at the parents. And the way that, so a hacker had broken into it and started yelling obscenities at the infant, and the way that he knew the daughter's name is that it was written over her crib in big pink letters. So we have these devices to protect us, but it's not clear at all that they're working for us. Going back to the Cassidy Wolf case, the key thing that people didn't realize is that we think that just because when our camera's on, we'll see the little red light or we'll see the little green light, that's how we know it's recording. But that can be disabled by a hacker. So to Stefania's question, yes, you could turn it off, but how do you know that either Samsung or a hacker wouldn't re-enable it?
Okay, let's go next to Birmingham, Alabama. Annie's turn on Coast to Coast. Hello, Annie. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for having me on here. And
sure.
I appreciate it, and I love your show. And I would just like to tell you that everything that I own and worked hard for all my life was stolen out from under me. My home, which was paid for, there was certainly no mortgage, but they created one. My life savings, my inheritance that I was about to get when my aunt died, that's what triggered it, is when she died, it drove them out of their minds. My vehicles and all my insurance policies, and it's the dirtiest thing I ever heard of.
Who did it? Who did this to you?
The crooks who run this town. they had the police shake me down, and they got my numbers.
Oh, Annie, you called me last week about the same thing. So, you know, good luck, and take our advice. Remember I told you, go outside the county to a different prosecutor. Not hacking the question for you, Mark, but she's had some issues in her county that she lives in.
I see.
Let's go to Paul in Las Vegas, Nevada. Paul, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Paul.
George, thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I just started listening to you about 8 months ago, and man, you're fascinating.
Thank you.
Hey, Mark, I was just curious if you've ever heard of the group. They were around in the late 90s, early 2000s. My ex-wife was actually friends with a lot of these guys, and I watched some of what they were doing, but they were called the Scam Baiters, and they were reverse scammers. They would take these letters from these Nigerian guys and do reverse scams on them.
Did it work?
Some of the stuff was absolutely hilarious, and I don't know if you've ever heard of them or not.
Yeah, I have heard of them, and it's funny because one of the things that criminals value, just like the rest of us, is their time. And so if you can tie them up by re-scamming them or keeping them on the hook, then it's a big waste of their time, and it's a good way to cut down on their resources.
Well, they tell them, Paul, to send money first just so they know they're real?
Yeah, you know, more or less what would happen is, like, you know, people who are being contacted by the Nigerians would forward these emails to the scam baiters, and the scam baiters would then formulate some sort of reverse scam that was usually something really hilarious, and they would get these guys to identify themselves by telling them to do things like, I want you to stand on the hood of a Jeep in the middle of your town in your underwear with scam baiters written in white letters across your chest. And they would do it. And so the scam baiters would then in turn publish these photos all over the place, publish the letters. One of the things that they did was a scam for quote-unquote Asus computers, only Asus had been misspelled by one of the Nigerian scammers as a human body part. And I won't bother to say what it was. So they told them that, okay, we won't charge you for the computers, but you have to send us the shipping fees. And they actually got the Nigerians to send them shipping
fees. Wow.
So they would send them things like shattered computers, broken computers. One box actually contained old broken dryer parts.
So they did send them stuff. Junk.
Yeah, they sent them absolute junk, and they got them to spend their time and money to get this stuff shipped over there. So you can look them up online. I'm sure they're still out there.
That's a great story. Hey, Paul, thanks. We're almost at the break here, Mark, and then we're going to come back with final phone calls for you. What do you do next? Do you speak at events or conferences?
Yeah, so I do a fair amount of public speaking. One of the things that I also do, so I'm doing writing. I teach up at Singularity University in Silicon Valley. But one of the things I'm looking to do is create a movement to help people protect themselves, and in the book I've written a protocol of 6 steps that people can take to reduce their threat by 85% online.
Super. Mark, let's talk a little bit about that when we come back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Jim Sanders joins us. His book, of course, The Downing of TWA Flight 800. We'll also talk about the missing Malaysian plane 370. And then David Wilcock joins us on Coast to Coast with more of his fascinating work, including, of course, reincarnation. But when we come back with Mark Goodman, let's take your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Mark Goodman. Final segment here as we talk about cybercrime. Let us go to Jim, who's truck driving somewhere in Georgia. Welcome to the program, Jim. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I had a question about software, but first I had a little situation happened to me a couple of years ago. I had to appear in court. I did security as a bodyguard work, so I had to testify against something in court. So right across the street was a gas station of the courthouse and the police department. I got gas. The credit portion of the machine didn't work, so I made the mistake of entering my PIN number.
Uh-huh.
24 hours later, there was a charge on my card, and I was able to track it down. It was used in New York at an AutoZone in Brooklyn.
Wow.
I gave the information to my bank. It was like $163, and my bank said, okay, we'll give you a refund. We see that you made the transaction at the gas pump within 24 hours of being in New York, so there's no possible way you could have done these two transactions in the same amount of time. So we'll give you a refund. I says, okay, so what about prosecuting? And they said, no, because it's such a low amount and it's a different state. They're not going to, they said, that we don't even do nothing about it. We just file it in our records and that's it.
Yeah.
I thought that was bad that they got away with that. But that's what happened to me. They did give me a new credit card, debit card. So I learned my lesson. Credit cards only at the gas pumps. But it was right across from the courthouse and the police station. So I can only imagine how many police officers and, you know, all the employees there that got scammed like that. My question was, do you have any recommendations on software, like, for example, PeerBlocker, that would help? And then I also noticed, like, for example, software like PeerBlocker, when it's showing, if I just go to even like Yahoo.com or Google, the PeerBlocker is showing me that I'm getting pinged from companies or countries that they're trying to access my computer through different ports, and they're trying different ports, and it's blocking them. What is kind of the purpose of these companies doing that?
So most people don't realize, that's a great question, most people don't realize that when they visit a website, they're not visiting a single website, but every web page today is almost created entirely fresh on the fly. So your version of Google, what you see on the homepage, what you see on Yahoo, CNN, it's all customized for you based upon your prior surfing habits, what they think you'll like. Your Facebook stream is different from everybody else's, and it's all customized. And one of the ways that they do that is by dropping cookies or little data files on your hard drive that tell the website you're visiting about you so they know what to show you. And you can use apps like the one that you just mentioned or browser plugins like PeerBlock that will go ahead and report some of that information about who's visiting your computer and who you're sharing data with. That would have helped with the OkCupid example that I mentioned earlier. If you were, you know, talking about your dating profile and you saw those data files go by, then that would have been very helpful. The challenge is that some of those tools require a fair amount of technological know-how that many users struggle with. So what I suggest instead is some common sense approaches that everybody can take that are a little bit simpler, but as an advanced tool, they definitely could be useful.
What are some of these devices, Mark, that people slip into ATMs to steal your magnetic stripe number?
Yeah, they're called skimmers, and they're actually quite popular, and gas stations, as the gentleman mentioned, are one of the most common places. So what they'll do is they take a little hardware device and they put it on top of the ATM, or they'll put it on top of a gas station credit card.
Is it noticeable?
No, they obviously work very, very hard to make it not noticeable. When they do it badly, it is. But what basically you're doing is you're sliding your credit card through the criminal's device before it goes into the real device. And so they make them and construct them to fit perfectly on top of it. And so it's not noticeable to you, again, unless they do a poor job installing it. And that's why I tell people, particularly be aware of isolated ATMs. So if you have a concern about it and you want to avoid the problem that our caller had, you can actually go into the gas station. So rather than paying at the pump, where it's easy late at night for crooks to come by and swap out these devices, go ahead and go inside the store and be particularly careful of ATMs that are outside, particularly like in 7-Elevens, those type of places, outside bars, clubs, restaurants. Those are very isolated and poorly monitored.
Right.
So it's easy for crooks to swap them out.
How long does it take to slip that thing in there?
It can be done in just a couple of minutes.
Gosh, I bet they're good. And where do they buy these things?
Well, they actually make them. In fact, we're talking about some of the new and emerging technologies. One of the ones we haven't talked about yet is 3D printing, right? Printing physical devices on a computer printer. And 3D printing is now being used by criminals to manufacture at perfect scale ATM faceplates that will fit over standard ATMs. There was a group of Romanians that were going up and down the eastern seaboard using 3D printed ATM skimmers to cover them up.
These people are brilliant, aren't they?
They definitely are very innovative, I will say that. And they're always looking for the latest hack and scam. It's their job.
All right, next up, Mike's in Waterville, Ohio. Happens to be a first-time caller. Mike, you're up with us.
Yes. Hi. Yes, thank you. I sell things on Craigslist, and these guys from, you know, thousands of miles away want to buy a $200 item and course, they want my address and they want to send me a check. And I say, no, cash only. But I'm wondering if that's something like the Nigerian scam or where they're trying to get you to cash their check and then they get your bank account number.
Yes, absolutely. It's a typical in-screen we trust problem. So sites like Craigslist and eBay has much more sophisticated methods in place to kind of detect and fight fraud, but of course they have problems there too. And on Craigslist, it's much less policed, and people don't pay mostly for putting those ads up there, so anything goes. And there's tons of different scams that go on there. Remember, I talked about money mules in the first hour, and those guys are often recruited and tricked through those types of scams. So when you're looking on Craigslist, for example, whether it be the for sale section, the dating section, the employment section, people that start asking you to send personal information well beyond what's necessary, be very wary of that. And I think your policy of cash only is a good one. There aren't too many guys from Nigeria that want to buy, you know, your lawnmower. So think about it.
What's going on with ACH fraud these days?
So ACH fraud still exists. Standard check fraud is out there. There are actually, you know, those old school forgers still exist, except that they have much better technology right now. So if you have any folks listening that run small businesses, this is a really important tip that I can give them. The small business laws for banking are very different than they are for individual accounts. So if you have an individual account, depending on your jurisdiction and where you live, you'll have anywhere from 30 to 90 days to report a loss to your bank if somebody commits fraud against you, ACH or otherwise. And the banks tend to be much more generous and lenient towards individual account holders. But if you're a small businesswoman or a small businessman and you've got $25,000 or $30,000 in your business account, those accounts often don't have FDIC protection because they're business accounts, and they come with terms of service. So when you open up your business account, they'll say things like, you've got 24 hours in which to notify the bank or you forever waive the right to get your money back. And so criminals realize this, and now they're going increasingly after small businesses, hospitals, volunteer fire stations. So I tell folks, be careful, talk to your tax accountant, but don't store too much cash in your business account. And if you do, make sure you're monitoring it on a daily basis, because your opportunities to get your money, your cash back, are much lower with business accounts.
Jeez, they just think of everything, don't they, Mark?
There's an app for that, right? You know, that Apple commercial, there's an app for it. When it comes to crime, there's an app for it, and they're fully ready.
Next up, let's go to Joanne in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm happy to talk to you.
You too.
It seems that we're extremely vulnerable. I'm going to talk about personally, just for the moment, for this whole call, talking about the United States with our grid. Now, are there suggestions that you have as to what we could be doing? It seems that we should be backing everything up so that if something goes down, if I'm in the supermarket and they can't do it because the computer's down, what's the backup? And we need to have like 2, 3, 4, 5 different creative ways of backing things up. So that's my basic question. I hope you understand it.
Yeah, I do, and it's a great point, and backups are really key. When Sony went down as a result of their hack, their backups were attacked too. So you have to be careful about where you keep them. I always tell people to keep sort of a physical backup of important information, so photographs and things like that, and then keep a backup offline, and that's very useful and personal, and then backup in a different location, because if you've got your computer and, you know, with your life photos or important information on it, and there's a fire in your house, right, there goes all your data. So you can back it up off-site as well and have one that's not connected to the Internet. And that's good for both companies and for individuals. From the social perspective, how do we go about building redundancy in these networks, such as the electrical grid that you mentioned? We need to do a much better job on that. The United States power grid is one of the most sophisticated engineering feats in the history of humanity, and it's old, and most of it was built, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, and we see what happens when a tree falls on a power line up in Quebec, right? We lose power throughout the eastern seaboard, so we're vulnerable from standard failures anyway, and you bring hackers into the mix, and it gets much worse. In Future Crimes, I tell the story of a town in Brazil that was, and it was not a town, it was like over 1 million people lived there. The electrical grid was extorted by organized crooks. So organized crime came in and said, hey, you pay us, you know, a few million bucks, or we're going to turn off the power grid. The city did not comply, and the crooks turned off the power grid in the city.
Well, we've got now a Mayat in the city of New York. Hello, Mayat. Go ahead.
Yes. Great show, George.
Thank you.
First, I want to share some information with Mark. The two P's and HIPAA, neither one of them deal with privacy. So it was sort of like a deliberate scam. Health Insurance Portability Protection Act. It's an important point. I heard about this when the privacy specialist, Catherine Albrecht, had on a guest that was specialist and how you can really get around this. So we'll look forward to your further researches. But my main question is, I want to hear more about this health insurance fraud, especially since we use these intermediaries with health insurance companies. So I want to hear, how did you come across this since the Affordable Care Act? Is it any difference? And I'd like you to further elaborate on the extent and what's being done about it. And lastly, the mules, are any of them able to get out of charges behind their pleading ignorance about their involvement? And I'll listen over the air if you understand my questions.
You good with that, Mark? Go ahead.
Yeah, I understood it perfectly, and thanks for the tips on HIPAA. I appreciate that. So with regards to healthcare, actually, I'll do it in reverse order. With regards to the mules, they do face prosecution. What they do is they now need to defend themselves. So while most of them, eventually the cops realize that they're mules, and there are so many mules that are out there, the cops have heard this problem before, but you're not going to likely avoid arrest, and you're certainly going to be interviewed by the police and brought down to the police station. So you better have a really good story and lots of proof. The other thing, too, is the cops are going to say to you, so wait, strangers are just wiring $300,000 into your account and giving you a 10% cut. Didn't that seem kind of weird? So once you take the victims, the so-called mules, through this, then they think it out and they see it. But there definitely could be liability. But the cops do understand that this happens, and, you know, they're not looking to arrest you. What they're trying to do is figure out the people who hired the mules and work their way up the chain to get to Mr. or Mrs. Big. With regards to the health care risk out there, it's really something to think about, and it's kind of profound. And it has to do with the way medicine works, right? Physicians and nurses, they tend to be very help-oriented, and so they think, I want to help people, which is a completely different mindset from the criminals, right? Cops understand that there are bad people who tend to be suspicious by nature, and so we're much more attentive to scams. Physicians see people, and they're like, oh, we need to help them and treat them and bring them into our hospital. And so their sensibilities about these risks and frauds tends to be lower. And along those lines, one thing that you could do, and this was sort of hinted at by the caller, is you don't have to give all the information that they ask for. This is another piece of advice I'd give people. If you show up at a place and they say, hey, we need your Social Security number, do they? Is that required? I know that many health insurers tie your services and benefits to your Social Security numbers, but others don't. So don't give up that information without putting up a fight. You know, I think you certainly should, because they are poor stewards of the information, and it leaks, and it's all of these intermediaries. I routinely, when I get forms, I choose not to answer stuff. So just being more careful about the information that you share. Once you've shared it, and you know, let's say your Social Security number is your health insurance number, you're kind of out of luck at that point. And if you go in to see, you know, a phlebotomist to get blood taken, or you go to get an x-ray, all of those people have no or very limited training in information security. So It's a problem that needs to be addressed, not just at the personal level, but at the systemic level as well.
Can you get a new Social Security number if it's been hacked and used?
You can, but it is not easy. The Social Security Administration makes it very, very
difficult. They don't like it.
Yeah. It sometimes can take a court order. So, yes, it can be done, but it's not something that's done routinely.
Harry in Montana, let's squeeze you in here. Harry, go ahead.
Hi. I was listening after I called here, and I think somebody else touched on the same subject I wanted to touch on, and that was the gas pumps.
Mm-hmm.
there was on the news tonight, there was some, they had a little bit of video on them, but these guys were they're hacking gas pumps up and down around the state. They just found the chips. They have a key to the gas pump, and they're opening them up and putting them inside.
Jeez.
And they're connected to a Bluetooth.
That sounds like an inside job, if Mark, doesn't it? If you have a key to the gas pump or what?
No, actually, those are standard. So remember we were talking about 3D printers earlier?
Yeah.
All you need to do is walk up to one of those pumps, take some, you know, silly putty or some clay, pump it in there, take it out, and then you can make a key. And they're using 3D printers to make those types of keys. So it could be an inside job in that there's a corrupt employee, but those keys are pretty easy to come by, and crooks have all different types of ways of reaching out to the key manufacturers and pretending to be a gas station and getting a new key as well. So, and that Bluetooth exfiltration is becoming very, very popular. So once the thieves install these tools, they don't want to have to come back and take the data out. In the old days, once they installed one of those skimmers, they would have to come back every day or two to read it and take off the data, which was, of course, dangerous for them. Now that data can be exfiltrated either via Bluetooth or actually via a hidden cell phone. So they'll hide a cell phone in there, and once a night at midnight, the cell phone will take all the data it's stolen during the day and upload it to the criminal network.
Great. Mark, thanks for being on the program. Incredible information. His book, of course, is called Future Crimes. For Dan Galante, David Hines, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.